Okay, Matt is not there. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech. Humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever in means there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Oh yeah, firstly I'll just give an update on, they've started the building of the Kuti. So the temple's raised about 8,000 now from everybody's generous donations, and there's been volunteers building the last 3 days. And I think it works out that it's going to cost about 12,000, so we've got a little bit further to go. Obviously, before you buy all the parts, you don't know all the math. So, but yeah, all the work's being done by volunteers, so we'll have a hut soon on this property down in the forest. That'll be lovely. So it's a beautiful spot, and there's some trees on the corner of the property. So, yeah, make it more a monastery. So that was that. So I thought, start with the meditation again this time. So just get yourself in a comfortable position. I usually sit cross-legged, so cross-legged if you prefer, and then back straight. Just get yourself reasonably comfortable. You can try and sustain the posture for half an hour. And just start by scanning through the body, from the toes of the feet up towards the head, just becoming aware of the different parts of the body and relaxing them. So toes, ankle, feet, calves, shins, knees, thighs, hips, waist, belly, lower back, diaphragm, solar plexus, middle back, chest, heart, lungs, in-breath, out-breath, upper back, shoulders. Just allow the shoulders to relax. Notice lots of tension held in the shoulders. Just let them unwind. Upper arms, elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, fingers. The neck. Just let the neck open out. The chin, the jaw, the lips, the tongue. The tongue down to the root. The nostrils, the ridge of the nose. The upper cheeks. The cheekbones. Around the eyes, bags of the eyes, the eyelids, eyebrows, the eyes themselves. As we relax the physical body, we also relax the eyes. The eyes are quite subtle to become aware of. We can notice the agitation and restlessness, the tendency of the mind to move. In the eyes. Just let the eyes totally relax. You don't have anywhere to go, anything to do. Our sole intent is just to be here right now, preparing ourselves for the meditation. Relax the forehead. Any worry, just let it evaporate. And the temples, the scalp, the ears, the whole head, from the center to the surface, the whole body, from the center to the surface. Just allow the body to be balanced. With good energy. Either too loose, falling asleep, or too tight and agitated. Just find the middle balance. Sense of inner luminosity and ease. Now's the time, if we have a meditation object, to bring it up. I'll give a guided meditation with the breath for those who wish. We choose a point of focus, like the tip of the nostrils, the upper lip, the roof of the mouth, the heart, solar plexus, the abdomen, some way of being with the breath. It suits us. Preferably, we use the same meditation object regularly. Having chosen a place for the mind to settle, become aware of an in-breath coming in, an out-breath going out. If our mind finds it difficult to be with the feelings of the breath, and we can use a mantra like Buddha, Bud with the in-breath, Do with the out-breath, Buddha. Or if that doesn't suit, maybe peaceful, peace with the in-breath, full with the out-breath. Aware of an in-breath coming in, aware of an out-breath going out. start with a soft awareness, like a bird snuggling into a nest. Just start to become aware. Bring our awareness, our focus, our attention right here, just with an in-breath, just with an out-breath. Just have an attitude to do our best. All we can do is try. The results don't matter. You just have to learn to put the causes in. From somebody who shows up for the meditation. We never have expectations, never attached to the results. In-breath is the present moment. Out-breath is the present moment. With our chosen means, we really try and tune into the feeling, the texture of the breath. It's comfortable. Attention to gather. See if we can be aware of the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath, the bodily formations. In-breath is born, lives, and dies. Out-breath is born, lives, and dies. Try and cultivate an inner sense of peace and happiness, sabai. Sense objects like touch or thought arise, we just see that they're impermanent. We don't need to get involved with them. They arise and cease of their own accord. Thought, touch, sound, just is what it is. Don't need to get involved. We just let it fall from consciousness and bring our mind back to the breath. Cultivating this pleasant feeling, just to be here with one in-breath, just to be here with one out-breath. Sustain good energy, a sense of inner alertness, awakeness, enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath, sustaining our chosen means. As we sustain the meditation object, make sure we balance our energy and cultivate this inner sense of happiness and peace. We'll be quiet now for the next 15 minutes. Just do our best, practice, put in the causes. see how the mind is after half an hour meditation. If we're very peaceful, we can just continue that peace if we wish. Or we can look at what the causes were. How do we nurture our minds, our awareness? What was our chosen theme? And how well did we sustain it? What was the effect of that? We also have to learn how our mind works, our own skillful means, so we can become consistent and proficient in meditation. If you like, we just end with a minute of metta. Just wish ourselves, may I be happy in our own minds. May I be happy. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. From the ants to the higher gods, lower realms to the great Yama, Saka to Mara, whatever beings there may be, ourselves to all beings, may all beings be happy and free from all forms of suffering. We share the goodness of our practice with all beings everywhere. Time we may end the meditation. And those who wish, you can keep meditating while you're listening. Getting to what is the heart of practice. You know, first we need like inspiration and faith, and then we need motivation to actually do the practice. So we need a practice to emulate, and we have to stick to that and actually do the work. And you know, and that's why we have the formal sitting postures of sitting and walking and standing meditation. Usually we take out lying meditation because most people fall asleep. But you know, if you've had enough of sitting, walking, standing meditation and you're physically tired, then you can lay down and meditate. But the result should be the same. You're still looking at your mind. So you know when you're sleeping and so forth. So, and that's why having meditation object is useful. Because, you know, you can be listening to a Dhamma talk and you can still have your meditation object. You can still be saying Buddha, reciting it in your mind in a gentle way. So you're constantly building mindfulness because the mind that's inattentive is far from practice. You know? So really, at the first level of practice, we're trying to build as much mindfulness as we can. You know, whether it's 5 minutes meditation, an hour meditation, 7 hours meditation, or whatever, you know. It all has to be mindful. There's no point walking up and down if you don't have any mindfulness, you know. And so the quality over quantity to begin with. But it doesn't mean if it's difficult, that doesn't mean you're not meditating. Because, you know, if the mind goes off and you bring it back, and the mind goes off and you bring it back, and the mind goes off and you bring it back, that's the start of practice. You know, that happens to most people. And some people it's worse than others. And so, you know, might be a little bit of a wisdom person then. So you need to use the wisdom first. And so what is your mind going off to? It's going off to thoughts. It's going off to sounds. And so you can contemplate right there. You can investigate and say, you know, well, this is just a Dhamma Aramana. This is just a proliferation of the mind that's arising and the mind is getting stuck on it. You know, what's this going to serve me? Well, this is just my mind reacting to a sound. You know, it's getting angry. It's getting irritated. How does this serve me? So when we're meditating, if we can't get with our meditation object, then we just use wisdom right there with whatever arises. You know, we don't, like Ajahn Chah says, we don't have to go looking for many things. Just whatever arises right there, we solve our own problems. You know? And the more we meditate, the more we can see that process. And then and having some other contemplations helps. Like the elements is a brilliant contemplation because, you know, you have earth, water, fire, wind, space, consciousness. So right there, there's everything. You know, it's all arising and ceasing. Rising and ceasing, rising and ceasing. And so if you break things down, and they're just elements. And then we add all these stories onto it. Like, well, you know, tomorrow I'm going to do this, and next year I'm going to do that. And that was me back then when I was 6 months old. And it's all just proliferation. There's no truth to it. So we use these things to help us so we don't, you know, we know a person from a plank of wood. You know, so the conventions are useful, but they're not useful when we're training our mind. You know, because the Dhamma is useful, but normal proliferation of the mind is not useful. So if we're going to think, we should think in line with what is true. And so sometimes if the mind won't settle down, then you do need a little bit of wisdom. Like until you have the skillful means of, you know, what meditation works for you and how to get into a peaceful state, then, you know, it is going to be hard. So you need to try, you know, read the teachings of the masters. And then ultimately just look at your own heart and practice right there. You know, don't think we need many things. It's just a matter of doing the work. And then also, you know, seeing that we're going in the right direction. So if we're irritated, then maybe we need to be practicing some more metta. Or if we're greedy, maybe we need to be practicing more restraint. Well, if we're sleepy, maybe we need to learn how to be more energetic, have more energy in the mind. Like, for example, the Buddha has a teaching called the Are You Dozing Moggallana Sutta, where one of the great disciples of the Buddha, the left-hand disciple of the Buddha, Mahamoggallana, before his enlightenment, when he was a new disciple of the Buddha, I can't remember how long it took him to become enlightened, not very long. But I mean, these are beings who have practiced with the Buddha to be for an incredibly long time, maybe millions of universes. They were perfecting themselves to be the great disciples of the Buddha. So they're excellent beings. And anyway, the Buddha noticed that Mahamoggallana was dozing. And then so, I'm not sure if he appeared before him or appeared in his mind, and he said, Are you dozing, Moggallana? Are you dozing, Moggallana? Yes, Bhante. So even one of the great disciples of the Buddha, you know, he was dozing. And so that's not a useful state of mind. So the Buddha then went through all the different things that you can do. And first thing is to change the way you're meditating. So it could just be trying to be with the in-breath, for example, because the in-breath is more energizing. So it's for just adapting your meditation in a way, or changing meditation object. Maybe you shouldn't meditate on death. You know, I will die, that's for sure. We will all die, that's for sure. The world will end any moment, whatever your meditation object is. You know, so the point is, how can you wake yourself up? So sometimes the meditation object may not be suitable to you at that time. So it's not that you have many meditation objects, but sometimes we do have to change our meditation object. So the first is usually, because if you're sleepy, it's already almost too late, isn't it? Because you're about to fall asleep. So clearly your meditation object at that time is not working. And it's not going to miraculously. Well, sometimes you can sit there and you're a bit dull and it takes a little bit and then your meditation gets better. So you've just got to know your own mind. But usually most people, when they're already in that dozy state, it's basically tantamount to sleeping. and then the Buddha goes through other ones, like I can't remember them all now, but things like rubbing your limbs and pulling your earlobes, and so there's a whole bunch of things when you're meditating on your own you can do. And I'll have to pull out the sutta, I can't remember it all at the moment. But I've practiced that a lot over the years, because sometimes, you know, I find it very hard getting up early in the morning, because we're meant to get up, in our tradition, quite early in the morning. And when you're really focusing on your practice, you want to be making use of the late evenings and the early mornings. And I found this a great one, particularly I remember the times I go out and look up at the stars, because that's one of the things to do. And the very last one is walking backwards and forwards. So if you go through all of these things, nothing works, and then you do your walking meditation with your mind centered. So it's you know the path before, you know the path behind you, but the mind is just totally centered in itself. It's actually a very nice way of doing walking meditation. And then if none of the 7 or 10 objects that are suggested there work, then you go have a rest. Lie down on your right side in the lion's posture and have a rest. So the Buddha's pragmatic. It's not, you know, go to you can't. But the point is that usually I would find after going through 2 or 3 of those, I would wake up. So the dullness of the mind is just a hindrance. You know, so... So this is what I mean about knowing our own heart, that you've got to be able to see, you know, not believe the stories of our own mind. Because the mind's like, oh, you know, you need this and you need that. And particularly with modern day science, you know, all these scientists think they know all this stuff, but they don't know much about the mind. So what they know is actually very little, you know. And so the Buddha basically taught, if you're getting sick, that's the time to practice more, you know, not to worry about the body. Because when you get really sick, that's when you're going to want mindfulness. Because otherwise you're going to be sitting there lamenting about your sickness. And then you're going to lose all your mindfulness and you're going to waste a week or two of your life. So that's why the Buddha taught us, you know, like to look at the mind. We take care of the body. We don't damage the body, but we also don't go over the top and, you know, go out of our way to pamper it too much. Because, you know, we give it enough food and we give it enough rest. But yeah, in the Thai tradition, we're taught, you know, speak little, eat little, sleep little, practice a lot. You know, that's the basic teachings. And so, you know, every now and then have a day where you don't talk. Every now and then, you know, see if you can reduce your sleep an hour. You know, don't just believe the stories of the mind. And then the practice, you have to see, you know, what we're actually capable of, you know, see what's important in our life. And, you know, whether you do lots of 3-minute meditations through the day or you do the, you know, hour blocks or however it is that gets you interested to practice more, then that's just, you know, what works for your own mind. But the goal of it is to practice a lot. And practice like our hair's on fire or our clothes is on fire. Do you think we would be lazy if our hair is on fire and be like, oh, maybe I'll put the fire out later. Maybe tomorrow, I'll just have a rest first. No, you'd have lots of energy. You'd have all the energy you've ever had in your life to put that fire out. And And this is how the Buddha wanted us to practice. This is serious. It's not we're not playing around. And then, so when you have these skillful means, you have these contemplations that work for your mind, then it gets you to practice in any scenario. And you know, these are the things, being a monk, that I've had the opportunity to cultivate over the years. But even then, sometimes, you know, you go through difficulties and you forget these things. So then, even though it's like starting again, you have to have a foundation. You know, you got to have a schedule. You got to have ways of doing things so that you're mindful. You don't just do things in a perfunctory kind of way. You have to be mindful. You got to be really there. And so, you know, like having tasks, like when you maybe when you drive the car, or when you make a cup of tea, or when you walk down a corridor, you have little times where you know what you're doing. Or if you have your mantra, you try and keep your mantra going. Every time you don't need to be thinking, and you're not doing something where you need your mind totally, then you can have the mantra. Because what's the point of the mind proliferating? Just try for a day. Just sit down for a few hours and let your mind proliferate and see how you feel afterwards. You know, it's no good. Yeah, and these days you're not only proliferating about your own problems, you're proliferating about what's on television and in newspapers and what other things people are telling you about. And so this is all the adversities of the world. You know? And it hasn't changed in 2,500 years. You know, war, famine, death, disease, end of the world, it's all the same. And so, you know, the point is just coming back to our own heart, our own minds, what is important to us. And it takes time to be able to, you know, build a practice that's skillful. And it's not, you know, we can emulate other people, but the only way to do it is to do it. You know? We can't ask somebody else to do it for us. Try getting somebody else to eat for you all the time and see how you go. They might get very hungry soon. And so the same with our practice. And so we need to know how to encourage ourselves, and we also need to know when we're being lazy, when we're not going the right way. And so to know how we're going the right way, we need to associate with wise people. You know, so we have the books of the great masters. And often people don't want to read them because, you know, they hurt the mind of somebody who's not practicing. But, you know, they're the people who've done the work. And so, you know, to read these things, they're giving us the most direct path. I see, the, you know, the teachings of the enlightened beings are usually the teachings that people don't want to hear. You know, there's less and less people are interested in practice in the world because we have so much convenience now. You know, it's easy to turn on the television. You know, it's easy to go shopping. It's easy to do all these things. Now you don't have, and we have, people have a lot more time now because of the washing machines and the running water and the, you know, the good roads. But we've got to be careful basing our life on convenience. And so it's okay, you know, to have these things. It's okay to meditate in a comfortable seat. It's okay, you know, all these things, but are we really practicing? You know? So sometimes, you know, having things that are a little bit more austere can help the mind. So we have to see. So that's why for the monks, the Buddha has the Dhatanga practices, because they're literally things that wear away the defilements. Like the eating the one meal at one sitting, just wearing rag robes, meditating at the foot of a tree, meditating in a charnel ground, which is like a cemetery where they used to throw corpses, and all these kind of things where, I think one of them is accepting food only at four houses. So you go on Pindabat, but only the four houses, the first four houses you come across. And so not that all monks would do all of these things, but the point would, you take up ones that will go against your character. So if you know, your mind wants to have an easy time, and you go, oh, okay, well, I'll take this one up. And so the idea is sometimes learning to be more frugal, you know, learning not to always have, believe the mind that it needs this, that, and the other. These are important white parts of the practice. So there was a mention earlier about questions. So if anybody has a question about anything, you are welcome.
I saw you last week.
Yeah.
I saw you last week and I asked about the monk who hung his towel in the wrong spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always wondered what happened to the monk who was actually hanging the towel. Because we know that it annoyed the other monk, but what happened to the monk? Did he ever realize he was hanging his towel in the wrong spot?
No. So that monk, I did tell him one day that he was putting his towel in the wrong spot, and then I noticed that he continued to do it, and then I told him again about a week later, and then I realized that I just had to work on my own defilements. And this monk didn't care what I didn't. I don't think he did it deliberately. So that was where I got that teaching that, every time I saw the towel and I saw my mind get irritated, then I had to come up with 10 reasons why.
Can he learn more than you, or?
Well, no, this is all occurring in my mind, so it had nothing to do with him. He probably never realized that he did anything. But
that's unfortunate.
Ten reasons why he was a good person. And so usually after I got to about 5, the mind gave up. But I probably had to do it about 10 times before, over a period of a few weeks. So yeah, this is the thing, that, we don't... Our mind wants us to go out into the world and to have the world just how we want it. When this happens, then I'll be happy. When I get this, then I'll be happy. When this person does that, then I'll be happy. When this leader is like this, then I'll be happy. But when has it ever brought anybody happiness? So actually, it's our own defilements. That's where we need to work, in our own minds. So when we see these things, they're just opportunities for us to practice. So yeah, mind you, maybe I was a towel maker in a previous life, because I had worked through a lot of anger with towels. So anyway, any other questions? Meditation? Okay. So, still 5 minutes. So. Last thing is... So just back to the main topic. So we need to know what is the food for our heart, what is the food for our practice. And I was very fortunate early on. I came across teachings that really suited my temperament. So I was in a monastery where I had a good teacher helping me with my practice. And I found the teachings of Lungpo Tet and Ajahn Chah and these kind of things. So these are like a lifeline that we have. And then I would recommend, rather than listening to a lot of teachings, that you just have one book or one or a few recordings or something, and then listen to them and read them and put them into practice. Because it's good to begin with when we start in Buddhism. You read a lot and try and understand what Buddhism is. But eventually, to actually do it, you want to just keep it very simple what we have to do. And the only way to do that is to put it into practice. Need to just focus on some core teachings, and then the rest is just to inspire the mind. And so the medicine for the heart is Dhamma, and then Dhamma is only really useful when it's in practice. And so we have these two terms in Pali, or three terms. Pariyatti is like the study of Dhamma, which is useful at the beginning. But if you just do that, then you'll just be a scholar going around beating people on the head with the teaching. So that's no use. So it has its place, but on its own, it doesn't mean that the person has developed their heart. And then you have patipatti, which is like practice. And so this is where we, have to kick up the storm and do the practice. And then patipada, which is the path of practice. And that's where we take all of that energy of our practice and apply it to path and fruit.
just putting it into painting, from your, with your experience and from my novice and exposure to it, what would be the first book you would read?
Well, to begin with, you just want like a basic introduction to Buddhism book. And there's one by, Kantipala, Buddhism Explained. And then there is, in the forest tradition, we have books in the library. I can give you some later. And then there's some older ones and some newer ones. So any of the basic of Buddhism. I'll have to have a look for you.
I found very good online the BSWA website with Ajahn Brahmali.
Mm-hmm.
He did a whole series of talks on the Nabalek Bot Bao Path.
Okay.
And I found that very good for a beginner.
Very good. So that was the BSWA website, the Eightfold Path by Ajahn Brahmali.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started it, I listened to those kind of talks and found them very useful.
Mm-hmm.
So getting an understanding of the Buddha's teachings, that's why I said to begin with, it's good to read to get to know what Buddhism is. And then after that, getting the teachings of people who have really practiced, like Ajahn Chah, because then that's the not just book knowledge, then it's actually coming from their people's heart as well. And very good. I think Jnana Tiloka as well did that old Buddhism book. Jnana Tiloka, I can never remember. There were all these Jnana monks. Anyway, the very first one. It's a free BPS book on Buddhism, and it goes through all the core teachings of Buddhism. It was first written in 1927 or something, and it has been republished since. So the BPS, which is the Buddhist Publication Society, also have some great free books online. So, but afterwards I can find one for you in the library. For the... Okay, we'll finish with the chat. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana, in every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor, may the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord, the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
And the Anamodana blessing. The beginning. Yata varivaha pura pare paranti sagarang evang eva itaurinam petanam upakapati chitam patitam tumhaṁ kipameva samichatu sve parantu sangapa chandopanaraso yata manichotiraso yata sabityo eva chantu Saparoho inasattu mate pavantvan tarayo sukiti kayuko pavahapi vadana sili sanichan vuta pachayino chataro dhamma vatanti ayuvano sukhang palang Pavattu sabha mangalam rakantu sabha devata sabha bhuta nupavena sada soti pavantu te pavattu sabha mangalam rakantu sabha devata sabha dhamma nupavena sada soti Pavantu te pavatu sabha mangalam rakantu sabha devata sabha sangha nupavena sada soti pavantu te
sadhu sadhu sadhu